You're listening to WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm Manoush Zomorodi, sitting in for Leonard Lopate. James Shamus has written and produced so many films, like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, The Ice Storm, Brokeback Mountain. But when his latest film, Indignation, opens this Friday, he will have added a new credit, director. Based on the Philip Roth novel of the same title, it features a cast including Logan Lerman, Sarah Godin, Tracy Letts, and especially the wonderful actress Linda Emond. And I am so delighted that they are both here with me today in the studio. And Linda was just pumping her fist when I said that James, who's smiling very broadly, is now a director. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. And thanks for having us.
All right. So how did you make the transition? You have so much deep, deep experience as a screenwriter and as a producer. How did that prepare you for taking this next step?
Well, the real preparation was the fact that I got fired from my studio gig. I was running a company called Focus Features, and my corporate betters released me from my duties.
Huh.
And in late middle age, I found myself unemployed and thought maybe it's time for a new challenge.
Was that something you'd always been thinking about? Like, is there a producer, you know, the joke in radio is that every producer wants to be behind the microphone instead of behind the glass, except not my wonderful producers who I'm smiling at. Is that a similar thing in filmmaking?
You know, it is a disease that strikes certain producers at certain times and certain studio executives also. And, you know, we all know that actors want to be singers and producers want to be directors. And it usually doesn't go too well, does it?
Well, you know, I don't know. This seems like a pretty promising start. Tell me how you decided on this script then. Why Philip Roth?
You know, I read Philip Roth's novel Indignation at the airport. I picked it up at the airport. It was actually, weirdly, a mass market paperback.
Huh.
Yeah.
Roth is mass market paperback.
Yeah, that was already a sign,
I
guess. And, you know, it's a late novel of his. I think it's his 27th or 29th. I mean, who's counting? But he's late in life. He's about to retire from writing. You know, he's quit. And this is one of the last ones. And he's looking back at his youth as a 19-year-old boy. In real life, he went off to Bucknell University. He was a working-class kid from Newark, New Jersey. And it turned out there weren't a lot of fellow Jews out there, and things were kind of weird. But he had certain experiences that I think marked him for life before he became the Philip Roth that we now know.
So it's very biographical.
Well, you know, all his work has that something to it that's autobiographical but isn't at the same time. So I think this is a very different version of him than we're used to seeing. And what touched me about it was he's going back to his 19-year-old self, or a version of it, and falling in love with a girl whose own trauma and terror and heartbreak and abuse is a mystery to him. He's ignorant. So it was an amazing challenge to have a protagonist in a story, a novel, or now a film, who you really love and empathize with, but who's kind of blind to what's going on in front of him.
So, Linda, you play the protagonist's mom.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get more into her character, have you guys worked together before?
No.
Oh, so how did you get drafted into this?
Gas James.
How did that happen?
I'm an abject fan.
Look, yeah.
Seriously, you know, this is a god walking among us. And couple of Tony noms, but that's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, one of the great actors out there. And living in New York City, of course, if you go to the theater, you're going to see a performance by Linda Emond. You know, whether you want to or not, she's going to be up there pretty regularly. And I've just been a fan for so long. And so I don't think we officially even offered the part, or I didn't audition anybody. I just said, does somebody know Linda Emond? Can I meet her? And that was it.
Now, Linda, you've worked with some pretty incredible directors, Terrence Malick, Spike Lee, Nora Ephron. I mean, it's kind of an awkward question, but how does James compare?
I could leave the room.
No, you don't have to leave the room. No, you would never have known that it was James' first feature. You'd never have known. I mean, obviously, he's been in the industry so long. He's done so much good work. He knows his way around a set. But he's an incredibly smart man and insightful, perceptive person. And it was evident from when I first met him and we talked about it that I had no second thoughts whatsoever. I mean, I wanted to just get in the room both to be with the material and to work with James.
Are you a Philip Roth fan? What did you think?
You know, I wasn't. I really wasn't a fan. I find his stuff tough. That doesn't mean, I mean, I recognize his greatness. But there is sometimes, you know, when you read things that you say, I recognize the greatness that is really interesting. But on the other hand, it isn't necessarily something that I want to pick up all the time and read. And I admit that that's the case for me. I find him tough. But I mean, in a good way, tough. But this one I thought was particularly great. And you cannot deny the level of his writing. And in this case, because James so wisely adapted it, but also was very true to Roth and to Roth's language. And there are sections of it that are nearly pulled right from the book.
I'll correct you there.
Okay.
Totally pulled.
Okay.
Out of the book.
Totally pulled. No, you made little excisions and things like that. But Roth knows how to write dramatically to speak it. I mean, the first time that I said it, there's a rhythm to what he does. And that's true of his books when you think of it. But I mean, there's a rhythm to it that translates well to the spoken word.
I'm Manoush Zomorodi, sitting in for Leonard Lopate on WNYC and WNYC.org, and I am talking to James Seamus, director of the new film Indignation and writer of the new film Indignation, and Linda Eamon, who stars in it as Esther Messner. She is the matriarch in the movie. Can you tell me about her character?
She loves her son. That's a guiding thing throughout it. Knows that he is an extraordinary young man, and that is being intruded upon by a paranoia that has developed by her husband, his father, and she is struggles with that greatly. But when she comes to visit him, her son, after a bout of appendicitis, and comes to visit him, she also comes to discuss things about her husband, and it's at that point that she meets the young woman who he has become involved with.
I love that scene, and not to give it away, but you have this, you're talking to him, and you're just very, you are loving and pragmatic at the same time, and I felt like you see each other, you and your son see each other in a way that just, as the mother of a son, really stuck with me.
Yeah. I think a red flag goes up for her, and at that point, saving her son becomes more important than anything else, including, frankly, her own happiness, her own life.
James, I was very interested. This movie takes place in the 50s in Newark, New Jersey. It is the second year of the Korean War, but it is American Jews through and through. I mean, being able to see the streets of a kosher butcher shop inside, what it's like when the ladies come in and pick out their chickens. How familiar were you with that world?
Not so much, because I was not a sentient being during the 50s. I was born at the end.
Well, neither was I, but my in-laws are from that era and world, so I was very intrigued by it.
Yeah, I grew up in a Jewish household. Clearly, you know, what's interesting to me, being Jewish, is this odd fact that if you have noticed, there are a few of my fellow Jewish Americans who work in the entertainment industry, and yet there
yes,
is
just a few.
An unwritten law that we don't make movies with Jewish characters and topics. And so,
do you talk about that amongst each other?
We don't, because it's a law also that we don't acknowledge it. So, no, it just never comes up. It's this crazy thing. I know that there are deep sociological, political, historical reasons for that. And there have been wonderful scholarly studies that have talked about, the Jewish history of Hollywood. But part of that history is its own erasure, that it just simply doesn't exist on the screen, except for moments few and far between. So it was a really pleasure to go back and find the language and the characters that I'm used to, I grew up with.
In light of that, it makes me want to ask you about this scene that happens between the dean of the school. This is Tracy Letts, who, gosh, he's in everything. He plays Dean Caldwell. And he has the scene with the protagonist, Marcus Messner, who's played by Logan Lerman, who's trying to deal with life at this WASPY school in Ohio. It's a very Rothian sort of scene, in that they each build an argument against each other. How did you go about doing it? It's 16 minutes, right, the scene?
Yeah. So my main approach to the scene was simply surviving it. You know, that was the goal, because you don't do scenes like that in movies these days, obviously, too. Obviously, you know, on the page, your page count. When you get past page three in a scene in the script, it's pretty much an indication that the film will never be financed, of course, unless it's an extended action sequence, and even
you didn't
want to
like
short.
Plow a bus through the dean's office.
Yeah, I did
at some
by
point,
the end of the day of shooting. Yeah, sure. Well, I think we all did. But look, we had two great actors going at it, and I knew that if we could find the internal emotional structure of a scene that essentially pitted a young Jewish man and this kind of, you know, very imposing. And if you haven't met Tracy Letts in person, it's
no.
Pretty,
what's he like? Pretty, what's he like?
Well, he's almost as intimidating as Linda Eman, but that's a whole other whole other story. And these guys really did go at it, and they went at it in single takes, one after the other. So it was kind of a superhuman feat that I got to watch at ringside during the day of shooting that scene.
So Linda, for you, you said that, you know, the script was kind of all there, but how much of your character did you decide for yourself? How much do you, and I'm just curious about your process more generally. Did you sort of, you came in here and I sort of gasped because you look so different here in person than you do on screen. And it's almost the way you've arranged your face and, well, you have also very cute blonde hair. And in the movie you have, you know, mousy matronly hair. How did you go about it?
It's different for every part I do. In this case, we went and visited where Roth grew up, and seeing that, knowing what her life might have been like, is good. Very useful for me in things like this to come up with what her life was like, is like on a daily basis.
Mm.
And but honestly, in a case like this, because of the writing, there's a lot that you just really have to open your mouth and say it. That's what it feels like. You have to get behind it and say it, because it takes care, a lot takes care of itself.
I have to ask, as a New Yorker, how did you recreate the scenes that take place in, how did you go about just that world? It felt very authentic. And being in that world, Linda, for you, must have been, I mean, just tell me about what it was like on the set.
Well, we really got to nerd out, you know, so we did our research and we had a great team, a great crew. But yeah, we're a low budget movie. We shot here in New York City in the zone, as they say, for union rules. We couldn't go further than about 30 miles from Midtown. So all those vast, expansive Midwestern college scenes were actually shot at the College of New Rochelle.
No way.
Yeah. So we shot them in such a way to make it appear, of course, that it was a bigger place. But, you know, look, when you don't have the money, it took us 24 days to shoot the movie. We didn't have any more money
fast.
Than that. So, yeah, we were zooming. And you know, you move the camera 5 inches to the left, and you're in 2016. You know, it just is how it is.
What about you, Linda? I mean, are you know, you're kind of big time. You're getting covered in the real estate section of the New York Times about your apartment.
Yes, but my very tiny apartment.
Your tiny apartment.
My rent-regulated tiny apartment. No, you know, we also had Amy Roth's costumes are extraordinary and things like that. I mean, we had great set decoration. We had great. And as James said, it's funny because you're in a space where if you turn the corner, you're completely out of it. But all of those people help to set an environment for you so that you feel you're inside of a world that occurred a long time ago.
I wonder, I'm so curious to know what each of you think, that this movie is coming out in the midst of some very tough conversations that Americans are having about identity here in the U.S. This presidential election, this idea of anti-Semitism has been brought up, that Trump potentially is an anti-Semitic, and this idea that we're looking at differences rather than, as Michelle Obama said on Monday night, how we are all the same. Is that in your mind as you were making this, or maybe it came way before all of this? I don't know.
I think we inherited a gift from Philip Roth, who in 2008 finished writing this book and called it Indignation, and he was reaching back to 1951, you know, a time of rising xenophobia in America, a time of increasing, I would say, you know, ghettoization of a lot of people, including Jewish Americans at that time. I have a lot of younger Jewish friends who are amazed that there was this kind of anti-Semitism in America, in my lifetime, or their, you know, their parents' lifetime. And also a crazy overseas war that nobody understood why was
Korean
being fought,
war, right?
And everybody's getting, these young people are getting scooped up into. You know, not to mention, just think about this, during World War II, right before our, you know, the time of our film, women are bursting into the workplace, they're getting a taste of freedom out of the house, and suddenly this gigantic patriarchal thumb comes along in the late 40s and 1950s and tries to push them back into the house, but also hypersexualizes them, and this kind of culture of slut-shaming emerges. So clearly, our little movie that takes place in 1951 has absolutely nothing to do with what's going on today.
So James is talking, when he's talking about the slut shaming, he's talking about the girlfriend in this. Can you tell me about the scene where you meet her? What was that like, Linda? There's two different, very different types of women coming together.
I just think it's a great little scene with very little dialogue, and dialogue that is not about what's actually going on in the room, which is what's great about it. And I think it's two women looking into each other's eyes and
sizing each other up.
Yeah, I don't know if it's even quite that. I mean, I guess that's true, but it feels more that she knows I see her, and I do see her, and you know, she knows that there's going to be a cost to that because of how damaged she is.
I have to ask you about James co-writing a song for this. Is that right?
Yeah. It was fun.
Yeah, you know, he writes, he directs.
No. It was hilarious. Look, we couldn't afford a needle drop for a big radio hit from 1951 to play in the car as our
What
as
would
our
have been?
Host.
Okay, before we get to that, what would have been like the song that you wanted
playing
tell
you,
in the car?
I will tell you an interesting fact. There's a gentleman still very much with us today whose first number one single dropped the exact month that our characters were driving on their way for their first sexual encounter in the cemetery, and his name is Tony Bennett.
Ah.
So he would have been on the radio back then. He would have been on the radio.
So you sit down to do a rip-off of a Tony Bennett? Is that what happened?
Look, my whole life is ripping off. I'm ripping off Philip Roth. I'm ripping off Tony Bennett. We had so much fun working on the song. And then we got one of my favorite singers in the world, Jane Monheit, to come in
She's
and
wonderful.
Sing it for us. And she just hit it out of the park. Mm. So the single you can hear, apparently it's a public link on YouTube.
Have you ever written a song before?
Oh, this is so embarrassing. You're speaking, in fact, and I'm saying this with a genuine rush, flush of blushing. I'm just like, I'm an Oscar-nominated screenwriter. And the story is, now that you ask, that I helped make a film called Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon back in the day. And we thought it would be a great idea to have one of those end credit songs for the Asian market, kind of a cheesy Cantonese pop song. So I helped work on that. I co-wrote that and did the lyrics. And we got Coco Lee to sing it both in Chinese, and we had an English version, of course, my original version. And the studio liked it so much, they asked Ang Lee and myself if we would consider putting the song on the end credits for the American release and the European. And we thought, well, it's so cheesy, but nobody hangs around for the end credits, so what the heck.
So
and
good.
We drop it on, and then my distributors were so excited that they forced me to kind of participate in this ridiculous Oscar campaign. I ended up getting nominated. Bob Dylan is in the same category. Guess who I voted for?
Bob.
You better believe it.
Thank you both so much. Indignation opens this Friday at Lincoln Plaza, Landmark Sunshine, and City Cinemas 1, 2, and 3.